are back with another episode of Bully Ball, Episode 7. I'm Jason Aponte, joined by Steph Sanchez as always. Steph, the 49ers beat the Miami Dolphins, The Miami Dolphins. But at what cost? And what did it cost?
Everything. It cost Jimmy's leg, and it's very unfortunate. It sucks because it was such a great win. Like, and as soon as, like, the high of the win kind of just subsided, like, shortly after, you were like, well, damn, like, what do we do now, you know? So it's very unfortunate for Jimmy. And, I mean, we can just go right into talking about Jimmy. I mean, it's a huge topic for the week. And, you know, just with the type of year that he was having, I think it's just very unfortunate for him, for the team. Probably having the best year of his career, honestly. At this point, I don't even know if that's debatable. And, you know, it was crazy because right before the game, there were the reports that, you know, the 49ers and Jimmy were open to him coming back another year after this season. And, you know, a lot of people took to Twitter to voice their opinions on that. Mine personally, and I'm sure for other people too, is like, well, let's just see how this season ends up finishing out, because the problem with, well, not the problem, but the issue that, you know, the 49ers have always had with Jimmy is that, you know, sometimes he gets hurt and, you know, they're not able to work around that. That's always kind of been something that has plagued Jimmy. It's plagued the 49ers. So let's just see how the year ends, and let's see if he can keep this consistency going as well. And lo and behold, like, later that afternoon, we're talking about him being out for the season. So, like, it's, you just can't make this stuff up. Nothing is ever easy for the 49ers. It seems nothing is ever easy for Jimmy Garoppolo, and, you know, with all the injuries that he suffered throughout his career. And it's just a huge blow. It's hard to feel like this isn't a huge blow to the 49ers Super Bowl chances.
All of that is true. And I think I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, the human, real quick. We are critical, but we're critical of his play on the field. It's very clear that Jimmy Garoppolo is well-liked. His teammates were very vocal about wanting him here. And then when you listen to them speak about the injury after the game, it only just reinforces that. But Jimmy's actually dealt with a ton. Injury after injury, basically being cast off. No playbook. Couldn't be a training camp. Have all of these people throwing mud on you. Then you're forced back into action. You start playing well. You're injured again. I can't imagine what this is like for him right now at this point. And if I tell you guys how gutted I was for Trey Lance, for Emmanuel Mosley, for I forget who else is injured for the rest of the year, Jason Verrett, then I feel the same way for Jimmy Garoppolo. I am afraid that this might be the last time that we see Jimmy Garoppolo in a Niners uniform, and I would hate for that to be the last image for him. Now, to be fair, today is Tuesday. It is 10:10 Eastern time. There was a report that said that the injury was not a Liz Frank injury. Doesn't mean that it's season ending. Doesn't mean that they know anything. So just not to give you hope, we're just reporting the facts. But that's the thing, is if that is the last moment for Jimmy Garoppolo, I hate that. And he was playing very good football. He was playing great football, actually. I'm just gutted for the human being. But we do have to talk about the ramifications of this. And you mentioned Ian Rappaport, and he dropped that report on Sunday. That was no coincidence. That was no coincidence. That never happens. When that happens on Sunday, someone leaked that purposely for that to happen. And that was no coincidence. That was not something that Ian Rappaport was pulling out of the sky for people who want to make the, you know, say that he made it up. No. That was something that was very matter of fact. Both sides are open, but they haven't talked about it. And my reaction to that was, well, let's cross that bridge when we get there. And, you know, if there was a way for Jimmy Garoppolo to finally end this thing with a Super Bowl and they want to bring him back, it's a good problem to have, in my opinion. And I'll take that all day. But do the 49ers actually think about bringing him back next season, Steph? Or do you believe that that was the last time that we're going to see Jimmy Garoppolo in a 49ers uniform?
I think right now it's too early to say, right? Like, there's so much that could still happen. I mean, Jimmy's hurt again. What if that once again hurts you know, the value that he's going to have this offseason? What if he doesn't have as many suitors? And, you know, once again, the 49ers are in a position where they're both 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo would be in a position where, hey, I mean, we can kind of work this out because, well, not because we're your only option, but kind of, yeah, they would be his best option at that point, I think, if he didn't have as many suitors. And let's just say most of his suitors maybe would be on lesser teams. Teams aren't very good. So then they're kind of looking at each other again, just like they did this offseason, and think to themselves, well, yeah, okay, let's do it again. So I could totally see that happening. I could also see the 49ers just saying, yeah, like, we've been down this road before. We don't want to have the exact same outcome. You know, let's just move on at this point. Because, I think that coming into the season, that was kind of the plan, right? One-year deal. Let's just ride it out for 1 year, see what happens. Let's try to get a Super Bowl. And so that, you know, I think it's just natural for the 49ers and Jimmy to just, like, want to continue to work together. But yeah, I mean, this definitely complicated some things, so it's too early to say, but I always say the 49ers do like to keep the light on for Jimmy.
We'll leave the light on for you.
Motel 6, I like it. Well, here's the thing, Steph, I think my biggest lesson this offseason was don't speculate on what the 49ers are going to do in the offseason. They're going to do whatever they want, and I think they like to play things to the last moment. When circumstances change, they pivot very quickly. So what's my answer to this question? I don't know. And I would be foolish to try to give a prediction at this point, considering no one would have ever thought they were able to reunite. No one would have ever thought he would have been here, especially with all the things that we talked about, not having a playbook, not practicing, right? Not being in the building, not even working with Brian Greasy. But I would be foolish to go ahead and try to give some sort of prediction at this point, which is probably just going to blow up in my face later on, you know, depending, because the 49ers, they do whatever they want. They don't do whatever we think they'll do. So I guess when we think they're going to zig, they zag. And it's the best way I can put it. So some other news came across, though, yesterday. Funny how this timing thing works, Steph. The news about Jimmy Garoppolo, right? And the 49ers went right out after the game and signed Josh Johnson to their 53-man roster. He's not a practice squad guy. So he has to be on the roster for 3 weeks. Let's keep this in mind. Josh Johnson, when pressed into duty for the Baltimore Ravens last season, filled in, I don't even want to say admirably, more than admirably. And he's a guy who understands the system. He's been around. Josh Johnson, Dante Johnson, lifetime 49ers. You can never get them out of here. But Baker Mayfield went to the Carolina Panthers and asked for a release. And I think that was probably the best thing at this point, right? The Panthers are intent on finding out whatever it is that they have in Sam Darnold. PJ Walker's there. Feels like Baker Mayfield's a bit of an afterthought, because this was supposed to be a year in which, kind of like Jimmy Garoppolo, auditioning for someone else, right? Auditioning for his next team. But with this injury, do the 49ers put in a claim? It is 10-15 now. So we won't know if they did, and we will find out. You'll probably be listening to this and know the status of the whole thing. I believe the 49ers are 24th on waiver priority, so that's pretty low. But should the 49ers, not will they get them, Steph, should the 49ers even put in a claim? That's the question.
I have been on the side that, you know, you can't leave any stone unturned. Like, you have to kind of just do your due diligence. And yeah, I would put in a claim for him if I were the 49ers, just because it's not so much because I'm not a fan of Brock Purdy, but, like, also you need depth anyway. So, like, wouldn't you want to have good depth? Like, good quarterbacks at this point in the season don't just fall off trees. And here you go with an opportunity to get someone who, you know, is on the younger side, has playoff experience, has starting experience, you know, all these things. And so I think the 49ers, it would be smart for them to consider it. At the same time, like, I know what Kyle Shanahan said. He did say he was a fan of his, but that they feel pretty good with where they are right now. And I respect that. So, you know, if that means that they don't put a claim, I get it. They feel good with where they are, fine. I feel good with where they are, if that's how he feels. But I wouldn't be mad if they explored it at all. And I don't understand fans who are out here like saying no to Baker Mayfield just outright, because for the reason I mentioned, like, you don't get these opportunities very often. And so I think the 49ers, it would be smart for them to just take that chance.
What the 49ers did on Sunday when they signed Josh Johnson was sign the best available quarterback in their mind. Well, the best available quarterback on Monday is Baker Mayfield. And if you're looking at depth, right? And no disrespect to what Brock Purdy did. We're going to talk about him right after this. It was one game. And if you keep losing quarterbacks to injuries and you don't know what Brock Purdy will be going forward, the idea that fans have been peddling about, I'm riding with Brock Purdy, stop speaking in absolutes. You could be high on Brock Purdy and be happy about what happened on Sunday. Well, guess what? Tampa Bay next week, Seattle Seahawks in Seattle the week after. We're going to find out. We're going to find out real quick with a whole week of practice, all of those things. So I'm not saying I want Brock Purdy to fail. What I'm saying is you need to insulate yourself as best you can. Baker Mayfield has experience in the scheme. Literally, Kevin Stefanski, Kubiak, Shanahan, all the same stuff. So there's no learning curve. And what did they ask him to do in Cleveland? Run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, play action, quick screens. Sounds like he can get that done. And the people that are like, you know, I had someone kind of like go at me. Have you watched him in Carolina? Yeah, Matt Rhule, Carolina Panthers. Not good. Definitely wasn't good. But at this point, Baker Mayfield's out there for you to claim to put on your roster and see what happens. For $1 million? A drop in the bucket? This is a slam dunk, yes. And I'll never understand people that are just straight up outright no. And one more question. For the people that tell me you can't allow that in your locker room, if you think Baker Mayfield would ruin the culture and the locker room that has been built by Kyle Shanahan and his leaders, then you never believed in that culture to begin with. That's the last thing I'm going to say about that. Steph.
And Nick Bosa wouldn't let that happen, by the way.
Nick Bosa won't let it happen. Fred Warner wouldn't let it happen. And yeah, I love that. And see, I think your TikTok needs to be, so what's up, Baker? You know, like when he gets into the locker room and all that stuff.
Baker, you good?
I purely want it for two reasons. One, you need depth. Two, the chaos. Yeah. Just absolutely give me all the chaos. Just embrace it at this point. No point in fighting it. Embrace the chaos, and I think everything will go much smoother. But I do think they should absolutely, absolutely put in a claim for Baker Mayfield, and I hope he makes it. I hope he makes it over there. So, but the whole locker room thing is overblown, Steph, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's assuming he would be the starter. I think if he were the starter, then yeah, like obviously there might be a little more, not influence, but just he'd have a bigger voice on the team. So it's a concern, but not really, because there's so many guys on this team who set that tone and set that culture that I don't think Baker Mayfield, he would have no choice but to just like get in line with this culture. So, but anyway, I feel like a lot of people at the beginning of the season were probably against Jimmy Garoppolo coming back, right? And the 49ers did it for that reason, to insulate themselves. And now the 49ers kind of have another opportunity to insulate themselves with the move of, you know, getting Baker Mayfield, because, yeah, we don't know what Brock Purdy is right at this moment. Just in case he turns into another Nick Mullins, let's just have another plan. You mentioned Josh Johnson. That's one of them. But, you know, it's good to have options, especially if you're really trying to make it to the Super Bowl, which I know it's a little cloudy right now, but again, the 49ers have to be able to insulate themselves. So for that reason, yeah, I agree. They need to make this move. But like in terms of Brock Purdy, he looked good.
Pretty.
And I'm not going to make the cliche joke that everyone is making, even though it was right at the tip of my tongue.
Pretty.
But I refrain myself.
Pretty. We should shy away from it because everyone's killing it right now with that.
Pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's being a little too overused, but Brock Purdy. So, Jay, me and you were at training camp, mm-hmm. right? And so we got to see Brock Purdy, you know, work for a couple weeks. Yes, Trey Lance was there. Also, Nate Sudfeld was there. What did you think about Brock Purdy in those 2 weeks of training camp?
I'm not going to be shy about my statements because I made so many during training camp about Brock Purdy, but I wasn't overly impressed. I will tell you what I did think that he did well, and I think it was on full display on Sunday. He's a good processor. Nick Mullins was a very good processor also. They have a similar arm, right? I want to say that he's very, what he did very well in camp was team situations. He's smart and he's good understanding the situation and making sure that everybody's in the right place and doing the right thing. I think two things that you saw in that game was he took some timeouts that were right at the right time. You know, things weren't looking right, timeout. Like, he never really forced anything. That's something that's really, really impressive. But other than that, we're at a place here where I did, obviously, none of us want to be, right, in terms of that. But it's got to be him. So even if Baker Mayfield comes in here, I want to state this. I want to see Brock Purdy keep starting. But you do need to have a backup plan. So let him start, see what he is. But when you say Nick Mullins, I get triggered. Here's why. Nick Mullins had games very much like the game that Brock Purdy had, where you said, hey, that's sustainable. Wait, that guy's actually better than the guy in front of him. And then the next week, Nick Mullins turns into a pumpkin. So I get scared about that, okay? That comparison, I think, is very valid. The two things that give me confidence is the kid looks tough. Nothing ever phases him. It looks like he doesn't get frazzled. You know, check out that third down throw to George Kittle with the blitz all on him. The Dolphins blitzed the hell out of that kid, and he didn't flinch. And Kyle Shanahan's going to find a way to put him in good spots. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's the reason that most people would even argue that Nick Mullins was a starter, which, you know, I don't think anybody really should have been arguing that. And then there's that ridiculous graphic about him, Andrew Luck, and Patrick Mahomes passing yards, right? But that's Kyle Shanahan. So, yes, what I saw from Brock Purdy kind of showed up in training camp, from training camp in terms of the arm. He tried to throw across his body back in the middle of the field. That ball just floated up there. That's something you can't do. But he doesn't have the arm to make those throws, but his process is very well. And I thought he did a really good job considering with pressure and pre-snap. So impressions from training camp are the same. That game kind of highlights what we saw. And it's got to be him going forward. But yeah, I was actually really impressed with him from the game.
My impressions in camp were pretty much the same. I mean, there were times where he was just mistake riddled. Like, he turned the ball over a ton. Like, in the first week, it was just always interceptions thrown by him. But I think, like, we did kind of see him settle down a bit, you know, more so towards, like, you know, the second week. And there were times that Purdy and Nate Sudfeld performed better in the situational drills than Trey Lance.
That's not, and that's not hyperbole. That's
I was
not,
scared to say it.
That's not, yeah, I know. That's why you kind of hesitated. I just want to make sure I back up Steph on this, because that's true. That is 100% true. And that is no indictment on Trey Lance. That's not her saying Purdy clears Lance before you go run to Twitter and yell. She is absolutely right. Objectively, there were times where Purdy was better situationally. I got your back, Steph. I'm not gonna let anybody.
Well, I appreciate that. And no, like, it's not a knock on Trey Lance. You know, obviously, we know that what happens in training camp, players can improve from that, right? Yes. And so, also, what we saw from Brock Purdy in training camp could also be improved. Like, some of the things we saw in that first week, for example, a lot of interceptions. But he looked better in the second half, and he looked better in this game. He looked poised. He played with confidence. To be thrown into the fire, only getting backup reps, you know, throughout the week, throughout the season, and come out and look the way he did, I think was impressive. Because I'm not going to lie, I mean, when Jimmy Garoppolo went down, I was like, there's no way we win this game now. We're talking about the same quarterback who did a fake handoff to the wrong side, you know, just a few weeks prior. And so I was nervous. And I mean, I think he ended up, you know, proved me wrong a little bit, at least in terms of just this specific game, right? He took command of the offense. He did what he needed to do. And I pointed out that the 49ers like handled the ball 2/3 of the game, 40 minutes to the Dolphins, 20 pretty much. And this is a big reason they won, I think. And I think Purdy deserves a lot of credit for that, because if you're going to dominate time of possession, you have to be able to sustain drives. And in order to sustain drives, your quarterback is going to need to make some key throws to keep those drives going. And he did that. The 49ers finished with 15 first downs through the air. Kyle Shanahan mentioned his third down throw to Kittle as being one of his best plays of the game. And I would have to agree. One of my other favorites was his throw to Deebo Samuel in a very tight window. So to be able to do that, like, you got to be able to play with confidence. And I see what you see, Jay, where like the ball's not exactly popping out of his hand. And that worries me, because teams are going to have a game's worth of film on Brock Purdy now. And they're going to see that, you know, like, he doesn't exactly throw the ball with some zip. Okay. And so that makes his passes easier to intercept. And so I think going forward, that's my concern, that, yeah, he played great in this game. The Dolphins didn't have film on him. They didn't prepare to play against Brock Purdy. And, you know, the Dolphins are not exactly the best defense. They're pretty average and even below average in some areas. So
I was told they had better talent.
Debo's post game, by the way, was just, it was gold. It was gold.
I love it. Petty's my favorite color.
I haven't heard that, but that's good. but on Purdy, like, that's my concern. Like, that, yeah, kind of the same thing that happened with Nick Mullins, right? Like, he looked great, and then teams got to prepare for him, and then he turned into the pumpkin that we now know. So I think it's a little too early to make any absolutes as to what Brock Purdy is going to be in either way. I mean, but I am being cautiously optimistic at this point.
Yeah, that's all we can be at this point. And what do we expect going forward? I expect Kyle Shanahan to do for him what he did for Nick Mullins. Put him in spots, process the field well, give him those layups, get it going. 37 pass attempts for Brock Purdy, 37 pass attempts the week before for Jimmy Garoppolo. And there seems to be a little bit of a shift here for Kyle Shanahan and his offense. It was usually run, run, run. Well, the 49ers have won 5 straight games throwing the ball more than they run it. That is something that's different. Speaking of Kyle Shanahan, yeah, he wanted this one. He definitely wanted this one. Mike McDaniel's back in town. We haven't even really talked about the Miami Dolphins yet in this game. Like, really, like, Kyle Shanahan, let me say something. Y'all better get up off my coach. Respect my coach. This happens during the game. He loses his second starting quarterback and is able to squeeze this win out from Brock Purdy. And then what he did on that final drive, that final last gasp for Miami after they got the long touchdown on the coverage bust. Third down challenge. Okay, now you go for it. Fourth down. By the way, ballsy call, Mike McDaniel, on your own 19, fourth and one. You got it, so it works. But then the second challenge flag on that fourth down, effectively ending the drive. Steph, why does Kyle Shanahan like to bully his proteges, what is it about seeing Sean McVay, LaFleur, and McDaniel on the other side? I can't wait till he plays Robert Saleh. What is it about seeing those guys on the other side that really makes Kyle get in his bag and coach some of his best games?
I think he just knows what to expect from them, right? And, like, I mean, the other coaches have that advantage too, but maybe Kyle Shanahan being the teacher, maybe he's just a step ahead, you know? It's definitely impressive, because all of these, you know, former assistant coaches are, you know, great coaches in their own right. And for Kyle Shanahan to do this to them pretty consistently, I think he's 12-5 against his former assistants, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So that's pretty impressive to do. And it seems like he definitely wins the chess matches. And you said it was all the more impressive. He did this with Brock freaking Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, former third string quarterback. Like, what? And what impressed me the most is that it just didn't seem like Brock Purdy being in there took Kyle Shanahan out of his game plan at all. He was like, all right, bet. Like, we're going to do exactly what we came here to do. I mentioned the time of possession. That was a huge key coming into the game. And I think Kyle Shanahan probably was able to make things easy for Brock Purdy. He's going to give him, those gimmies, those easy throws to make. He's going to get guys open for him. We know this. And yeah, when he also went for it on a fourth down, Kyle Shanahan did again, by the way, because we were talking about the fact that like he's starting to do this. Is this a normal thing now? Like, is he gonna start doing this on the regular? I like it.
Seems like coach is evolving. Seems like coach is evolving, right? Like, everything was centered around the run game. Okay, the run game's not working. We're gonna pass now to score points and run now, and then run off of that. So, and you see that, you see the fourth down stuff. Coach is still getting better at this point. And now, back-to-back winning seasons? Is this where we are? Is this our reality right now? Back-to-back postseason, maybe? Like, this is the stuff, again. Trends are trends until they're not. Every single trend that everybody wanted to point to when they wanted to knock Kyle Shanahan is one by one being chopped down week after week. And I love this for Kyle. I love this for us. I am so happy he's our coach. And coach isn't going anywhere. So stop it. Everybody stop it.
No, it was definitely impressive. I loved the challenges that he made. And for me, like, I mean, I was there at the game, so I don't know how it was on TV, like how much time like he had to make that decision, but it felt like it kind of needed to be a quick decision, and it wasn't super obvious watching it live that was something good to challenge. So credit also to the guys, up in the box, you know, who probably gave him the thumbs up to challenge that. But those were huge. I mean, the first one, yeah, it didn't end up phasing the Dolphins. They were able to convert after that. But the second one, I think, like, yeah, if you think there was another play in the game that put the nail in the coffin, this overturned play on fourth and one was putting the nail in position. You know, it was like grabbing the nail and grabbing the hammer, just getting it ready. I thought that was huge in this game. And to challenge twice in one drive, when the Dolphins were moving the ball, that was probably the Dolphins' best drive of the game, maybe, just in terms of like them piecing it all together. And it was just very impressive. Kyle Shanahan, I think, put on a clinic against Mike McDaniel in this one.
The nail was in the coffin, but you know who put the nail in the coffin and finished it? My favorite player, Robbie Gould. Like, give it up for the kickers, baby. Let's go.
I was not expecting you to say
that. It's so funny, right? So that final drive, Christian McCaffrey has a – and happy birthday, Robbie Gould, by the way. Shout out to him, man. Victory Monday yesterday, birthday. Good for him, man. Christian McCaffrey has a long run. It starts to look like, hey, this is a chip shot for Gould. And you're like, okay, negative play, sack, 10-yard penalty. Turned a chip shot into an almost 50-yarder. And I start to get a little bit nervous because Gold's one thing that he doesn't do well sometimes is 50-yarders. So they're able to get to, make it a 48-er, but Gold was nails. Like, he just knocked that thing through, and that was the end of the game. But then the defense just wanted to put another exclamation point. I think it's time to talk about them, man. This is an evergreen topic. This is something that we are going to talk about every single week because this defense is, like the kids say, like that. And if you were out there and were nervous about whether they could stop high-powered offenses, you don't worry anymore now. Now, here's what is also funny, and I'm going to start with this on the defense. The first play of the game is a 75-yard touchdown. Hello, Trent Sherfield. Yeah, whatever. Good for you. Yeah, fine. But that felt like it was a coverage. It was their own mistake. It was Tashaun Gibson taking a poor angle, and you know you get beat when that happens, right? Then you look at their second touchdown, the one to Tyreek Hill. That was a coverage bust. Talano Hufanga got too aggressive, jumped on the under route, and you know what? Now you let Tyreek Hill pop behind you, and boom, that's a touchdown. So when you think about that, this team gave up two touchdowns, and they can largely blame themselves for that, right? And you mentioned it. That one drive that ended with Gesicki's, overturned call, that was their best drive. That was. One other thing I want to say, because we're about to start singing their praises for real now. Tua was not good in this game. Not good. No. I don't know how it looked in the stadium, Steph, but there were guys running wide open that he was just overthrowing, underthrowing, just like he was not good. If this was a game to stake the claim for people that wanted to push this narrative that Tua Tagovailoa is a top 10 quarterback or better than Justin Herbert, which is ridiculous, this is not the game for it. He was largely bad in this game. And you could say, hey, it was the pressure, all of those things. But in the first half, I felt the 49ers defense wasn't exactly like nails more than it was Tua not playing well in this game. But
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Okay.
I'm glad you mentioned that because like I did actually feel like in the first half, guys were getting open.
Yes.
Guys were open. And it was just Tua just absolutely missing them, like completely. And so almost in a way, like D'Amico didn't even have to adjust too much. Like, he dialed up the pressure a little more towards the end there. But in the first half, that was all Tua just like bombing passes. And I'm sorry, my cat wants a word. She has
agrees.
Some thoughts on Tua
she agrees.
As well. she agrees. But yeah, I'm definitely impressed by what this defense does week in and week out. I know this game was the big test, right? It was the measuring stick for this defense because we saw what happened against the Chiefs and the Dolphins putting similar numbers up to the Chiefs. Like we were kind of not concerned, but just like, okay, let's see what they can do now. And I came away impressed, and I'm not entirely surprised by it. Tua was under duress like pretty much all game, and you can tell the 49ers were really able to disrupt his rhythm, which to this point in the season, that has been a huge part of what they've been able to do. Tua getting the ball out quickly, they're moving. And the 49ers were able to disrupt that, and I think that is the reason that he just looked out of whack, right? Because he just had to sit in the pocket a little bit more. He's not used to doing that. And I think even just that caused some of those inaccurate passes, despite guys being open. The defense also held the Dolphins to 0% third down completion.
Zero.
Because they did not convert any of their 7 third downs. Like, that is huge. And Jay, can I talk about one guy for a second?
Oh, man, let's go.
Talk about one guy.
Let's go.
Nick Bosa.
Oh,
three sacks.
He's pretty good, huh?
Three sacks. He's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
He's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Two tackles for loss, the forced fumble as well on the strip sack. He now leads the league in sacks with 14.5. Mind you, he missed a game.
He did.
He missed a game and a half, actually.
More than that. I would say a game and three quarters, right?
Okay, yeah. I like that even better. Quarterback. He's first in quarterback hits, first in pass rush productivity, first in penalties drawn, second in pressures, second in pass rush win rate. He's winning 29% of the time. He's on pace for 21 sacks this season. And that, again, is after missing a game in three quarters. So, man, if you look at the NFL leaders in pressures and you look at the snaps that they've taken, Nick Bosa has taken the least snaps out of all of them, obviously, because he's missed the game. And he's still up there in production, which I think tells you everything you need to know about Nick Bosa and the season he is having. And yes, he's the only two players, I think, that should be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year are Bosa and Parsons right now.
Yep.
And yesterday, with that performance, Bosa, I think he's going to get more chatter around it right now. Mm-hmm. So let's see if he could keep that going. But I like it. And did you hear Joe Staley? He was on KMBR and he said, yeah, like Bosa like whispers his name like under his breath when he's like playing.
Wow.
Oh, I just motivate myself and I say my name over and over. Bosa, 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 Bosa.
That dude is just.
I can't wait for your next TikTok.
I got material, man. I got material. At this point, I'm convinced that Bosa's like throwing some good nuggets in all of his pressers, you know, just to feed me some content. So thank you.
I will say this.
I gotta say one more thing. I gotta praise one more player. Because Arik Armstead is back.
Oh, you took my go. Let's go. It's good. He deserves it. Go.
No, you can cook after me. You can cook. Yeah. We could both cook here. Since I mentioned Arik Armstead a couple weeks ago as the most important returning player for this team, I have to speak up because it hashtag fits my narrative.
Love that.
Arik Armstead, even in his limited snaps yesterday, looked like the guy he did early in the season when he was helping clog up the middle, creating opportunities for his teammates. I think some of Nick Bosa's sacks yesterday were made a lot easier by what Arik Armstead was doing. On the first, Armstead gets double teamed, and I think they only chip Bosa. And, you know, at this point, chipping Bosa doesn't really do much to him. It's like chipping a bear, like literally, and that's not going to do much. So on the second sack, the overload front, Arik Armstead helps part the ocean for Bosa to run through untouched for that sack. So I am so glad that Arik Armstead is back. I hope his foot and his ankle are feeling good after that game. And I'm just pumped to have him back for this second half stretch here.
Nick Bosa said in his press conference that he said he saw a little dog in Brock Purdy. Well, I saw a little cat in Tua Tagovailoa. And this is why Arik Armstead is so necessary. That drive that Jimmy Ward got the interception, that was the Arik Armstead drive. He not only, like you said, occupies the middle, but he brings two people with him and they run a stunt in which now Nick Bosa can run freely. Nick Bosa was already balling before Arik Armstead got here. But There's a lot of people that try to use, well, look at Arik Armstead's numbers. You know, Arik Armstead didn't register a tackle, sack, anything like that. Nothing in this game. Zeros. But when those people that try to talk down on Arik Armstead bring you stats, tell them to watch the game. Actually watch the game, because what he does is not quantifiable by any stat. It's just not. The attention that he draws, what he does, how he's able to spring other guys. Nick Bosa got three sacks. Arik Armstead needs a 0.5 on one of them that was opened up for him because of that. So it's great to have him back. And that's exactly who I wanted to sing praises on. There's so many people on this defense. One more person. Someone that I've been a little bit critical of. I think he's playing his best football of his career. Dre Greenlaw.
Yeah.
Dre Greenlaw was able to carry Tyreek Hill and caught, and he just firing to the ball. Something where I believe there was a play where Hill caught it, and he has nothing but grass in front of him, and it's a 2-yard gain or something like that. And shot out of a cannon, Dre Greenlaw doesn't even allow him to get a yard and gets over there and tackles him. Like, man, this guy has really controlled his aggression. You could tell he wanted to body slam Tyreek Hill, just put him back down. he was going to do it. I'm glad.
Progress.
Yeah, there's progress little by little. But Dre Greenlaw's playing his best football, and this is why the 49ers have the best linebacking crew in the league. And this is the fun part about this defense. Every single week, we can go. Like, we can open up our discussion every week. Nick Bosa was really good. Okay, evergreen statement. But we can also talk about, hey, this week, it was Greenlaw. This week, it was Mooney. This week, it was, you know, it was Fred Warner. And this week, Arik Armstead's back. This team is so loaded. This defense is still like that. And they're number one in almost every category. And now, this is another thing that should give you confidence with this offense and Brock Purdy. Games are not going to get out of hand. They're just not. The defense won't allow it. The defense won't allow it, and D'Amico Ryans won't allow it. Shout out to D'Amico again, too. Again, we could do that as well, too. That's another evergreen statement about D'Amico. But they're always going to be in position to win games. Again, it'll go back to what I've been saying this whole season, and it's more true than ever. How far this team goes now, especially with Brock Purdy, is all going to depend on how many points they can score. And there is no number. The name of the game is score more points than your opponent. Find a way, get it done. And it doesn't always have to be pretty. But this defense is always going to put them in a position where they're never going to be out of a game unless something bad happens. You know, so I mean, it's just every week we can pick someone else, and it's just really fun. This defense is the best defense I think I've ever seen as a 49ers fan.
You know, a lot of times when there's a really good team, you know, and if you're a fan of that team, you always look to that team's quarterback, right? Like, you're always like, oh, Patrick Mahomes will save us, or, you know, vintage Tom Brady will save us here. For us, it's kind of like the defense has that impact on this team. They are like the quarterback of this team in terms of like the impact that they have and how they are able to dictate games and close out games. So I'm thankful for that, because at the moment, I would say we don't really have a quarterback. So I think this team can go as far as this defense takes them. And based on the way they're playing, that could still be very far. So I'm encouraged by that. I have like the utmost confidence in DeMeco Ryans and this defensive unit. And that's a great way to feel like going into the playoffs, that you have this juggernaut defense who can take on a team like the Dolphins. And because that's going to be huge come playoff time.
Absolutely. 41 minutes. I think we're at a good spot to end this. Guys, subscribe to the Niners Nation Podcast Network wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you drop that 5-star review, and we will read it on here no matter what you want to say. You want to say Steph clears Aponte, I'm tired of him, I'll have to read that. So you can put up whatever it is that you want. Follow Steph on Twitter at Steph49K. Follow me on Twitter at JasonAponte2103. And Steph, what is your cat's name?
What? Mike, I have two cats, all right? So one of them is Simba.
You're Mufasa's boy.
Cliche name. Love but it. He's an orange tabby, so it fits him. And the other one is Rue. She's a girl. She's a calico.
Okay. All right. So. Well, on that note.
That was so random.
Let's get out of here. Let's go Niners. And another victory Tuesday for us at this point. But yes, Tampa Bay Bucks next. Uh-oh.
Let's go.